Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
In his book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, Suzuki spoke of fulfilling our inmost desire. Those are the words he used. Fulfilling our inmost desire. When I first heard that, when I first read that expression, when I first read that sentence, I was very confused because, you know, in Buddhism we say you should get rid of your desire. And here he is talking about fulfilling it. So, what's going on? So when we first hear that expression, fulfilling our inmost desire, it may appear that he was talking about something emotional, some emotional desire. A little strange, I thought. It seemed odd to me because he always spoke in a very straightforward way, never mixing up words. When he spoke of his understanding of the practice and of Buddhism and of the true nature of the things of the world, his language was always objective and unemotional. He wasn't like a popular minister that you might see on television. He was very unemotional and quite straightforward. And he said, in fact, in the book, so when we discuss religion, it should be in the most common and universal way. So he's talking about fulfilling our inmost desire was very confusing. I thought he was talking in a roundabout way. But eventually I realized that he was not speaking of desire in the usual sense. He was not speaking about desire in the way that we ordinarily understand it. Desire as we understand it is understood to be referring to something personal, our own personal desire, something we want for ourselves, not for others. Desire is something we want for ourselves. And so generally, our desire is limited to our own pleasure or our own comfort. This is the usual way we understand desire, so it has a kind of selfish orientation and has some emotion associated with it. Desires can create various emotions, and as we know, those desires and those emotions can create various problems for us. So for Suzuki Roshi, when he talked about our inmost desire, he was not talking about our small self, something that our small self wants. His meaning and what he was pointing to with this phrase was something universal. Our inmost desire is something universal, something everyone has in common. Something everyone is in common. Our inmost desire is the same for everyone. This is what he was talking about. To say something, of course, is a very vague way of speaking. But we're talking here about some universal quality, or the source of our life, the source of our existence. So the inmost desire that he refers to, it cannot be described precisely. When we have an ordinary desire, we can always describe it, say what it is. We can talk about what it would feel like and what it would taste like, what it would look like. Desire is usually that way, but our universal, our inmost desire cannot be described like that. It cannot be spoken of in terms of our own everyday objective experience. In other words, our inmost desire cannot be grasped by our conscious mind. So it means we should not entirely dismiss any emotion that we have when we explore how to fulfill our inmost desire. When we say, what does that mean? An emotion can be a door to understanding. This is something Dave said in his talk some months ago. A year ago or sometime. Dave said that. Emotion can be a door to understanding. So we don't dismiss all of our emotions. We can allow them to give inspiration and motivation and direction to our life, to help us express our innermost desire. A few years ago, I taught a class at Stanford in the continuing studies at night, not for regular students, but for working people who can sign up. And we studied the book, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. That was the course, study the book. It was interesting how popular that class was. So many people signed up to explore Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Anyway, at one point I asked the class what they felt was the meaning of inmost desire. And the responses were oneness, wholeness, wisdom, peace of mind, understanding. These are notions that point to our human longing. Our inmost desire is about that. Fulfilling our human longing. So a few years ago, my wife and I went on vacation to Hawaii, which we do a lot. And one day we went to see the whales close up. We went on some whaling boats with some tourist tourist whaling boats to see the whales up close. And it was the time of year that they come down from the Arctic to give birth and to feed their babies with their own blubber, so that the babies can develop enough blubber to migrate back to the Arctic to feed. So it was the time of year where they were populating the Hawaiian Islands. I remember the captain of the boat was a small blonde woman in her early 40s. Her name was Jill. She had a very slight build, very weathered from being on the boat so much, but she was very strong and very energetic and very forceful and very confident. And we paid attention to her when she said to do something. And she was very weathered, as I say, from taking many trips during the day, during the whale season. And each trip included, 20 people, including children. So the day that we went out was partly cloudy, which was nice. Partly cloudy over the islands of Maui, Molokai, and Lanai. And the water was a little bit choppy. And Jill knew exactly where to go. There was a particular spot in between the three islands. She knew exactly where to go. And we got to the spot, and she stopped the engine, and so we drifted. And almost immediately, we saw the whales. We saw their spouts. We saw their backs as they came out of the water. We saw their heads come up and their eyes turn to look at us. We saw their flukes. We saw the adult flukes, and we saw the flukes of a baby. Apparently, they like the sound of the engine, so when they hear the boat coming, they swim to it. And when they come out of the water with their heads, it seems like their eye is looking at us. And it is amazing. It is an amazing feeling. I call it spy hopping. They come out of the water and they look at you with that eye. I call it spy hopping. And it's amazing when they spy hop really close to the boat. They have this huge head, and there's this small eye looking at you. Amazing. It was an ecstatic experience for most people, being with the whales. There was a great deal of excitement and a great deal of rejoicing. There were shouts of, "We love you. We love you." And people eagerly reached over the side of the boat, hoping to touch the head of the whale. Someone said, "It's like seeing the eye of God." That's how inspiring the trip was. Somebody said, "It's an interconnection with another being." The sight of the whales caused things to be stirred up. It was a very emotional experience for many. Almost everyone on the boat felt some emotion. It was, I thought, like the expression of our inmost desire, our longing to see and feel the connection with our larger self, and to put an end to the sense of separation that we have. The proximity of the whales, for a moment, for a time, put an end to that sense of separation. We felt we were connecting with something really, really big that's usually hidden. Looking into the whale's eye, we had the feeling that the whale was seeing us, no less than the way that we were seeing the whale, and that the whale had just as much longing to see us as we did to see him or them. And this was part of the joyous feeling that people had, knowing or feeling or sensing that this huge creature wanted to see them. And this mutual seeing, we saw the whale saw us. This mutual seeing put an end to the sense of separation from the great being, our true self, and put an end to the sense of separation from our own self. That, I think, was why there was so much joy and emotion that day. The emotional experience was very positive and uplifting and very joyous for everybody, as if something great and mysterious had been revealed. The kind of experience you will forever talk about and recall for the rest of your life. Wow, let me tell you about the whales. The event was extraordinary, and it was unique. So as much as we were touched by seeing the whale, the seeing that day was not what in Buddhism we would call true seeing. True seeing. Seeing the whale was exciting and felt otherworldly, but it was not seeing our true nature. Because fulfilling our inmost desire and truly seeing our nature is not dependent on excitement or emotion or memory or a special event. Some people might have felt, I had this special event where I saw my true nature. Seeing our true nature does not happen that way. Although being on the boat that day, you would have sworn that that's what happened. So as deeply moving as they are, the emotions, you know, that arise from such events, these emotions do not last. And these emotions, these exciting emotions, these extraordinary feelings, cannot satisfy our longing for oneness. We need to see without emotion. We need to continue to see when the emotion fades. In other words, we need to see not through the mind of our personal self, the conscious mind, the small mind. As Suzuki Roshi said, eyes only see things outside, objective things. True seeing does not depend on particular events. True seeing is continuous. unexciting. It is not about having some unique experience. It's like we say, true seeing is when big mind sees big mind. Big mind sees things equally, not just exciting things. Big mind is just as interested in the smallest thing as it is in the most exciting thing. So this is the point of our practice. We sit in Zazen. We try to sit without anything in our mind. We try to let go of the things that arise in the mind, the things that are looking for excitement. We try to let the mind be calm and clear and experience its immensity without emotion. And to see things as they are without distortion. A big mind can express itself when we lose ourself. This doesn't mean you shouldn't go see the whales. It's very exciting. But we shouldn't mistake it or give it too much meaning. So the founder of our school, Dogen, his most famous writing has to do with when he said, to study Buddhism is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by all things. So that sounds like some kind of psychology, you know. Analyze your mind and analyze your emotions. And then you will progress to the next stage of practice. So it sounds like he's saying, first you do this, and then you will progress to that. So actually, there's another way to understand what Dogen meant. To study Buddhism is not to, you know, read it and unpack it and analyze it. To study Buddhism, he means to study your true nature, your big mind. When we do that, when we can see our true self, then to study Buddhism, to study the self, and to forget the self all happen simultaneously. There are no stages. And to be enlightened by all things is a view of the world that is beyond an emotional experience. So if some deep emotional experience touches us, we let it touch us. And let it be a sign of our inmost desire. But we should be careful of trying to seek for it to repeat itself. Then it is no longer our inmost desire, then it is something else. We have to be careful of not becoming trapped by our desire for exciting experiences that by their very nature are temporary. So the point is we just continue our practice in a quiet way, and see the world with the eye of our big mind, and let big mind see us. Let big mind see us. Then we can see ourselves, see who we really are. And then there will no longer be confusion about our life and about its meaning. So if you get a chance, go to see the whales, but remember to come home. Does anybody have a question?
Thank you for that and the story of the whales, which you told so poetically. In this idea of big mind, I guess right away, seems like it suggests little mind, and that was where our emotions are, I guess, is little mind or small self. And my intuition is that I can't cast out or don't want to, wouldn't even know who I am without my emotion. So it seems like my little self would be inside of big mind, and that it would include my emotion, but just the idea that it's not all that is available, that's, I don't know, it just struck me that it's in one inside the other, and I don't know if that's right, but I'm asking, is that right?
Our emotions come and go. And we everything comes and goes. So what is it that remains? So we have our emotions, and our experiences, and our desires, and our joys, and our life, and we enjoy them. And we can really enjoy them and appreciate them when we realize they are temporary and we are more than our emotions and our ideas and feelings, and we are more than our life. One of the most wonderful things about our practice, and something that we don't understand until we get some experience, is that we really don't need to analyze what's going on with us. We don't need to unpack the emotions and the desires and see them in relationship to themselves and to something bigger. All we have to do is experience it and gain understanding through the experience, through the flow. No need to look under a microscope. You know, everything in this world fits together because everything is flowing. Usually we think that things will fit when we stop them and push them together, like puzzle. But things fit because they're always changing. And this is the experience we can have when we just sit quietly and let the mind rest and be aware.
My mind gets sometimes stuck with the specialness and ordinariness of the world. And Kim's question brought up the whole idea of after Zazen in the evening at Tassajara, look up and you see the stars because there's no light pollution. And you can see the starlit sky. It's just amazingly gorgeous. One day I was, a month ago, I'd come home late from work and said to Lee, I'm going to go for a walk. I just have been sitting too long in the car and driving, and went for a walk for 2 miles and came back and realized that I had never looked up in my own neighborhood and saw the sky. And there's stars up there too. And I was thinking about that you know, the big mind is everywhere. It's just, it's at Tassajara, it's around us. We just have to look up and sometimes see the stars. It's as simple as that.
You should write a poem. The stars in my neighborhood.
People will think of people from Hollywood live there, so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody writes poems about the stars of Tassajara. You can write one about the stars on Main Street.
What you said a moment ago about we fit together because we're flowing, we're not stopped, but we're moving. I notice that oftentimes when people are just moving on the sidewalk or in line, there's very small movements made, like adjustments to accommodate. It's almost automatic or unconscious. That gives me some hope for the, you know, small kindness that I see people around me. It's encouraging, I guess. I noticed, this was a few months ago, there were 4 or 5 boys sitting at a cafe, and they left all their bicycles right in front of the door. They were like 12 years old. So I was the same way when I was 12. You know, that's the definition of immature, 12-year-old boy. So I went up to the table, and I was a little nervous, actually. And I just mentioned, you know, the people were, I said, you guys block the door. People are having trouble getting in. There was a lady coming in a wheelchair. And I thought they were going to just tell me to take a hike. But they surprised me. A couple of them got up, and they sorted it out. And I think maybe they just needed a reminder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was like, I don't know. I tend to notice and analyze these interactions between people. And I also had a question about big mind. It's hard not to literalize it. You know, how to think of those words, big mind. Is it a personal thing? Like we each have our own version, or is it a universal collective type mentality that we are in tune with? I'm assuming it's not like my own personal big mind. It's like a common experience, maybe. I'm confused. So my question is about the nature.
We're all big mind. When we see each other, we see big mind. When we see big mind, then there is no separation, and no more, you know, suffering. So it's whole idea is not something we should really think about too much. Let it go and just try to understand how to live it. If you see a flower, can you say, oh, big mind? If you see an earwig, can you say, big mind? If you can feel, if you can feel big mind in everything you see, in everyone you see, that means your practice is becoming quite ripe.
Thank you, Les, for your talk. I've always loved that quote from Suzuki Roshi about your inmost desire. As you say, it sort of at first sounds like, wait a minute, desires? We're not supposed to be indulging in desires. But then as you think about it more, it becomes more clear. There's another quote from him that's in that little book of anecdotes and quotes called, I think it's To Shine a Light, where a student asked Suzuki Roshi, if we're not supposed to have any gaining ideas, why would we ever come to practice in the first place? And Suzuki Roshi smiled and said, well, actually, you can have one gaining idea, which sounds even more sort of paradoxical. And the student, of course, said, well, what's that? Tell me. And Suzuki Roshi smiled and said, well, that's a secret. Which seems even more sort of paradoxical, right? I mean, we don't have secrets in Zen. You know, you don't advance to the next level of the inner circle and pay more money to become a higher level Scientologist or something. So I've always kind of been a little puzzled about that, but I think it really shed some light on what you said about our inmost desire is not just a desire for something better than most of our petty desires. It's really something quite different. It's not something that can be grasped. It's not something that can be talked about or logically reasoned about. And I think that's really probably what Suzuki Roshi meant about saying it's a secret. You know, I can't tell you. You have to find it for yourself. So thank you for that insight. I appreciate that.
Yes, Lee.
Yes, Les. I've always been fascinated by the experience of flow, when you mentioned that word when you were talking about big mind. And it's usually seems to happen when you kind of let go of trying to control everything and are just in the moment and doing whatever it is you're doing without thinking about how it's going to come out or anything like that, but just, and those moments are all too rare, of course, for most of our lives, but when you do that, you kind of feel something perhaps similar to what you feel when you actually are in meditation. Do you think that there is a connection there?
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N do.org.